This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. Well done, team. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their half-day or full-day tours of Canberra. You know, for the longest time, Canberra has been known for two things. Legal fireworks and... Oh, no, I can't mention that second thing, can I? Questacon? Let's say Questacon. But it should be known for three things, really. And that third thing is its ever-expanding beer scene. So if you'd like to check out the great beers of the nation's capital, book a tour now at daves.com.au.
Sessionable.
Well, welcome to Sessionable, live at the Royal Albert for Hottest 100 Day 2018. We've got a massive lineup of guests. This is probably the most people we've ever had on a podcast, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. In fact, almost. There's no...
I think we're definitely pushing the weight load for this bench.
Number 10 in the countdown just got announced. Motion above me, but it's not working. So it's number 10 is Kaiju Crush, which is super tasty.
Yeah. Highest ever placing for Kaiju, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. It's their first top 10, right?
And today's charity is Herman's Hands, which it seeks to increase the conversation around suicide. So it's a very worthy cause. Should we get going?
Let's fucking do it.
Should we introduce our many, many guests? Welcome back to the podcast, Dave.
Thanks for having me. I kind of love coming here.
Yeah, this is we haven't had you on. Haven't had you on for a while.
It has been a little while. Yeah. I can't remember when, but
so Dave, where are you from at the moment? Who are you representing today?
I'm representing all hoppy brewers around the country with this shirt on, but I'm from Akasha Brewing Company.
Woo! Woo!
Ow!
That is so much better.
And over on this side, we've got Doc as well. Welcome back to the show, Doc, from Doctor's Orders Brewing.
Thank you very much. I think that's, number four?
Yeah, I think you and Dave might be tied for most guest appearances.
Possibly, yeah.
Which is why we had to have both of you on, because it wouldn't be fair if, you know, one of you...
So the final bit of the podcast...
It's in the contract, right? I'm not coming on unless Dave does.
Yeah. Well, we're going to say at the end, you guys have to Rochambeau to see who wins and gets the next one, so...
We have to what?
Oh, we'll talk about it later, don't worry.
Yeah. Sound like a teabag fight?
I'll draw a graph, you'll be fine, yeah.
And sitting to the left of me, we have Jackson Davey of Wayward Brewing Co.
Hi. How are you?
Another returning guest.
Hi. Yeah, second time. Yeah. Flattered to be here.
Our final guest, returning...
As our Australia Day correspondent.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It's Tim Hodge from Sydney Beer.
G'day.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for joining... Tim, thanks for joining us.
Good start.
He was saying hi to me.
And thanks to you to join us as well, Tom. Yeah, cheers.
It's a massive lineup today. Super exciting. We're going to be talking about the Hottest 100 countdown, what's happened so far, as it happens, we'll be talking about it, all that stuff. Big predictions, which are tempered a bit by the fact that we know what beers are in the top 10 now, but... More or less.
I haven't really paid too much attention so far, so I'm guessing...
If you downloaded the sweeps sheet, you could probably figure it out.
I'm guessing Rabbit and Spaghetti is going to get number one.
Yeah.
I had $50 on that.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
Was it only $50? We'll also be talking sort of about last year in beer, everything that happened. Well, not everything that happened, but all the big stuff that happened. Stuff that we've talked about a lot before, but it'd be nice to hear a few other perspectives on it, not just... us, yeah.
So, Dave, you did pretty well. Corbin Deed, was it 44, I think I just saw?
I don't know. Where's the list? Yes, it is. We say it every year that we're just happy to have beers in the Hottest 100. And we actually, as each year goes by, more and more breweries, more and more beers, more and more people voting. We are honestly elated to have two beers in the Hottest 100. So, yeah, the Corbin got into number 44, I think it was. 54. Wish it was 44. No.
44 for Corbin D.
Excellent. So, both of those beers we're really happy with. I mean, the Hotsmith is, last year, the year before, we got number 100. So, it really is a flagship beer for us and something that we're focusing long and hard on. And for it to move up into the 50s is awesome for us. Even the Corbin D, we lost, I think we were 25 last year. But last year we didn't actually brew much of it, so So with not losing too many places, considering all of the new players and the real lack of distribution we have on that beer last year, we're really happy.
What's the plans for Corbin D and the core range for this year? Are you planning to expand, to kind of move up a few places, or is it just going to be business as usual at Akasha?
I think it certainly is business as usual in as far as our beers go. I mean, there's no secret that we're a hop forward brewery, and that's what we do. And then, unashamedly, that's what we do. We want to keep doing that. The Hopsmith and the Corbin D will continue to be our focus, particularly the Hopsmith. We think it's one of the best IPAs around, and we love it, and we continue to grow on that. I think the biggest difference for us will probably be distribution. The brewery has grown significantly in the last 12 months. We're currently, annualized brewing, to over 500,000 litres a year. So we're starting to brew a lot more of it. You'll see our distribution increase. You'll see our can range increase. And you will see Corbin D in cans within the next month.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome. We've got beer number 9 on the countdown has just been announced. It is Beechworth Pale Ale from Bridge Road Brewers. Okay.
Very nice.
Excellent, which was a beautiful pale ale. So...
Doc, you're usually trying to brew beers that are kind of ahead of the trend. What do you see? What did you see this year so far from the countdown in terms of trends of craft beer in Australia?
To be honest, I haven't taken any attention to it at all. I had a quick look just before we came on, and that was my first look. It's great to have it. It's a good sort of commentary on where craft beer is at in Australia, but at the same time, it's not overly representative of some of the innovation that is happening in craft beer. It's more about where some of the beers are produced, as well as how they are distributed and the availability on them and different options, and that's sort of some of what makes it pertinent to the Hottest 100. So the trends, though, it's been a year of sort of sours, a little bit more barrel aging coming back in, and New England IPAs, and sort of a 30-second sum up.
It's interesting, though, because so far in the countdown, there hasn't been as many sours as there was last year, which I don't know if...
Yeah. There's some gozers, but I haven't spotted one, like...
Sour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's also because then they don't get nationwide, they don't get the number of votes needed to get into the top 100. So I haven't seen any commentary from the guys as to is there been more votes than previous years, or is voting down or not? So is that representative of the demographic that is voting?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially once the whole countdown's out and we can compare all the details.
I mean, it could be that there are more sours to vote for, which means that the sour vote's being diluted across more beers this year. That could have played a part.
I think we've seen a lot of fruited sours in the last year as well, and I think by their very nature, they're more seasonal, so they don't get that breadth or width of distribution, so it makes it harder for people to vote.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of fruited sours...
Hi.
What are we drinking?
I saw an opportunity, I'm sorry.
It's been practicing all week.
Well, actually, we should say what we are drinking, what the first beer of the podcast is. This is the Modus Operandi and Gilbert Street Social collab beer, the Watermelon Gosa. Right? Does it have a name, or is it just...
It's called the Twisted Melons.
Twisted Melons.
Which is a Watermelon Gosa.
Yeah.
Yeah. We thought we'd have a watermelon sour on the podcast, as usual.
Yeah, we usually start with a watermelon sour, and this is a different one than usual, but...
This one's an independently owned one, so...
Sad.
Yeah. The other one didn't make the 100 this year.
Did not register.
Did not. No. Did it make it last year?
It did.
Yeah, it did quite well.
And, did you say Hop
every other year before that?
Shot down to...
Well, that's another big trend we could talk about. Hop Hog, Feral, Pirate Life, especially, I think...
Big
have
hits.
Really taken a hit this year.
Watermelon Moorhead, by the way, was 67 last year. So middling.
I haven't seen any 4 pints at all.
No, Pale came in...
Pale came at 16.
16 or so?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, Pirate Life...
We've had Kolsch and Indian Summer Ale as well.
Yeah.
We have had Kolsch and Indian Summer Ale.
Yeah, they've been lower down, yeah.
So it looks like it might be a more independent top 10 than we've ever had.
I think so. Mm. I think so. Certainly the recent buyouts have really taken a hit.
But yeah, I mean... Pirate Life registered, I think, the most beers of any one brewery. They registered 7.
Well, I've seen,
but topped out at 13. That was the highest rated.
Bridge Road had a lot in the 100 to 80 mark.
Yeah, true.
So Bridge Road will be up there definitely with the amount of beers in the 100 as well.
Yep.
So what, I know Jackson and I had a few drunken predictions that we wrote down a couple of weeks ago. And I've been...
Do you have them with you?
...way off the mark so far.
I think I have two, actually.
I predicted 3 Wildflower beers in the top 100. Yep. And I think that's a big swing and a miss.
Yeah, that's a big... Next it's a bit year. Of a surprise. I don't know. Next year.
I'd picked Back to the Brewer to be in the top 10, and that got in the top 20.
Top 20?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, Jackson had Lupulin Fog in the top 50. That's a... Yeah.
Yeah. High hopes. I love you too. Dave.
Dave likes that.
No, I've also said three Akasha beers in the top 100 across the board.
Now you're so close.
I was close.
You got two in, right? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've got to say, my secret, the two beers we got in were the ones that we hoped for, but there was a little part of me that hoped Lupulin might have made the 100, so I'm with you, Jackson.
I had another one that Mosaic would be the highest placed Pirate Life beer. And I don't, is that even in the 100?
No, it didn't make I don't think it made it.
Yeah. I'm on fire this year.
No, I agree, with you, though. Yeah. I thought that would grab attention.
So what do we think then? Were we expecting the kind of falls that we've seen from Pirate Life and Four Pines?
I didn't expect
Feral.
It to be quite that drastic.
Yeah, I was sort of, you know, it's easy to say that now, but I'm not too surprised. It's I think that there's been a lot of backlash on the sort of the online communities, and I think that is honestly a fairly good barometer.
But at the same time, it's also now a pretty mainstream poll, being in Dan Murphy's and all that.
But I think these being such big news stories of the year, I mean, more people are realising what beers are owned by which companies.
Yeah, true.
Mm. And I think that's a big reason why we've seen a drop, basically. More people are realising that the beers they love are not owned by Australian companies, and they're punishing them in this poll.
Is it that, or could you argue also that it's like that simultaneously there's a graduation? You know, the people who voted for Four Pines Pale last year, regardless of who owned it, have now moved on to fruitier pale ales or shit, sours or darks or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I think that beer journey thing can just take people voting for the most obvious, most available option and take them in different directions.
I think there's probably as many people coming in and starting their journeys each year as those who are progressing onto the next level, though. So there's probably people to fill that void of those whose palates are moving on.
Fair point.
It does seem to be a deliberate shift away from, you know, the big news stories of buyouts and the negative publicity that comes from that, I would say.
Yeah, I think also, you know, I think Doc touched on it before, but distribution's a key part to playing well in the Hottest 100, right?
Yeah.
And I think more and more there's more beers out in nationwide distribution, so
that's right.
That audience is getting bigger and bigger, so it's diluting that pool to some degree.
And that's a good point. I mean, even pre-buyout, these breweries had nationwide distribution anyway, right? So they didn't get that benefit from a potential buyout of you know, being distributed further and therefore having more exposure in the market.
Yeah,
they were already highly exposed.
Yeah, and there's still that big regionality, like, you know, Burley placing up there. I mean, has anyone seen a Burley beer on tap in Sydney? Like,
nope.
But
I actually was thinking about them the other day, and I actually looked up their website to see if they were still brewing. And I found their Facebook group and everything else, and sure, they still are, but they seem to have gone really local and regional.
Well, they also
area.
Go like nationwide through bottle shops, so they're in like ALM and all those big distributors as well.
Yeah, so the venues that I frequent, which is a core set within Sydney, I've never seen it on tap in the last 12 months at least. Something put them on my radar again. I went to look to see if they were still brewing.
Well, I had someone sitting at the bar earlier today and said, oh, who's Burley? I've never heard of them before. And like, yeah, so I mean, they've been around for a long time. But yeah, so you still get that regionality things, you know. I was looking at the odds on Sportsbet yesterday, and I just love the fact there is odds on the Hottest 100.
Yeah,
and they had Furphy in at like number 3 or 4,
yeah, like $9 to the bet. Yeah,
yeah, like, you know, I'm pretty sure it's a Victorian release, but the fact that that's getting up there, it's, you know, it's insane.
Have we? Yeah, we have seen Furphy, haven't we?
Yeah,
yeah, 38.
You know, and seeing a lot of the big guys dropping down a lot, like, you know, Little Creatures and stuff. Well, Rogers was right on 100, so they're all dropping down a lot of points.
Yeah, and I saw Wild Yak was in the list, and it was in the top 50, I think it was. If you have a look, so
there you go.
Yeah, Matilda Bay still got one in there. Little Creatures, their pale ale was still in there, so
They're not in the top 10 like they have been in other years. But
oh, here we go. Number 8 has just been announced. And we have... This might be our top-ranking NIPA, top-ranking New England IPA. It's the Jedi Juice.
Yeah.
That's a huge scalp for them,
from Hop Nation. That's massive.
We've got booze.
There's love in the corner.
Yeah. we can bring the mic over to you if you want. We've got some New South Welsh pride for our NIPAs in the room. But yeah, this was that's I think higher than anyone probably expected for that one.
Oh, it's good to see some new styles coming through. I think we were just saying before about the sours. I was horribly surprised that there weren't more sours, you know, like the Raspberry Glenlivet and by Wayward. And but I think I think the New England style, obviously, it'll be interesting to see what happens next year. We knew there was going to be a lot in the list this year. I think it was fairly obvious, but. What, you know, I think the more the discussion is around how, you know, does the style have legs? Does, you know, will we continue to see more and more released, and will we see more in the Hottest 100 in the next year or two? I think that's the exciting thing to see.
So, a quick show of hands, who here has had the Jedi Juice IPA? Most of you. Keep your hand up if you think it's the best New England IPA this year or last year.
From Australia. In Australia, yeah.
No one.
I think the really interesting thing with this style is how it travels, right? So I think
it's also a very tough room.
Actually, that's a good question. I've got a question.
I think that there's a couple of styles like that one that was a couple of beers that have been nationally distributed. I'm not sure. I think the further they get away from their home state, the worse nick that they're in. But I think a lot of more people down in Victoria would say that it's a great beer than up in, you know, New South Wales or Queensland or states further and further away.
It does get a lot of hype on the beer forums, though, as well. So a lot of people are out hunting it, trying to track it down for the first time and everything else. So obviously that's played in its benefit.
Just out of interest, of everyone in here, who voted for a New England IPA in their top five? Got a couple. So what do you vote for example? Lupulin Fog? Lupulin?
Dave, I'm going to say you voted for.
Bucket Boys, yeah?
Never assume. But it was Lupulin Fog.
Well, there we go. I think that also shows it is a very regional style. It doesn't travel.
It should be regional style. It should be. Like, people shouldn't be paying and getting Treehouse shipped over here. They should be drinking local ones.
But if anybody gets some, I'm quite happy to help them drink it.
Same goes for Cloudwater,
right? It's definitely not wrong.
100% same goes for Cloudwater. But, you know, yeah, and things like Jedi Juice. I haven't had a chance to try the Jedi Juice. I had tried a can of the Juicy from Three Ravens, and I got one. It was pretty fresh. And I was like, yeah, this is all right. Like, I'm not raving about it, but maybe having it fresh on tap. I mean, I had my favorite beer for the year was the Back to the Brewer from Mountain Goat, and that was purely because I got to have it at their birthday. I think they cold fretted it the day before.
Yeah, it was like 2 days old or something ridiculous.
And it was amazing. But then I've had it in bottles since, and it didn't live up to it. And actually, I had some bottles that are really, really shit that just died. It's just not a beer to hang around with. But yeah, I think thoughts, are we going to see twice as many New England IPAs next year?
I hope not.
I'd like to see it even spread. I really want to make sure we see more sours next year. I think it's taken Australia a couple of years to really nail the style. I think, but we're starting to see some good ones come through. So I'd like to see a few more of those make it. I don't know. How many do you reckon we're in there this year?
It was like 7 or 8. Yeah.
I don't want to see more than that in a list of 100. No. It is. I think the style has legs. There's no doubt about it. I think it's a great beer, and as long as it's done well, I don't want to see too many of them. I don't want to see too many. Yeah, you know, I want to make. I think it's like. Independent beer in general. We want to see the quality of independent beer rise so that the sector rises. I think we want to need the same sort of thing with New England IPAs. We've got to make sure we see lots of good examples to make sure it has legs. And that's just not here. That's in the States as well.
Doc, am I sensing that you're not 100% on the haze craze train?
I've had some really shocking ones. Yeah. And I've had a couple of really good ones. And the good ones are worth drinking. The other ones are not worth even buying. So it's one of those sort of fad sort of styles, but if you can do it well and you can continuously do it well, then absolutely do it. But a lot of them are just trying too hard and it's just shit.
Yeah, agreed.
I couldn't agree more.
I mean, we're still seeing the pale ales being, you know, the big one, and you know, we are seeing those breweries doing the tactical thing of just entering their pale ale in and asking their fans to vote for that. Is it always going to be a pale ale heavy list?
for now?
Did anyone read Hendo's commentary?
I was just about to ask that exact question. Yeah,
no, so, I didn't get to.
And I've had this discussion with a number of breweries who are prolific brewers who brew like, you know, 40 lines in a year and whatever. And in the past, it's like, you know, every time you're producing more than a core range of maybe less than 10, then people are going to vote for their favorite within that. And it just dilutes the number of votes that your brewery gets, even though that, you know, maybe the majority of the beers are fantastic. So the only way in which you can is to focus some of the, you know, commitment to a couple of the beers within your range and hope that you get enough momentum to get listed and get in there. So I think a few breweries are doing that because, you know, you're not making a core range of a pale and a lager and an amber and a dark anymore. You're doing a lot more than that. So
interesting, because particularly after reading that, when Hendo was saying telling breweries only just put one or two beers in there, I've spoken to a lot of people, like from a consumer point of view, so they get turned off when their favorite brewery doesn't put the beer that they really like, yeah. And then out of spite out of that, they'll just vote for another brewery because they don't have that one that they want. So, like, can you win? Is there, like,
it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I made sure my beers that I produced last year were registered, but I didn't promote anything of anything. I knew there was no worth in actually putting in the effort and just clouding it up and just...
Yeah.
That was it.
That was one thing I was going to talk about. Every year you see the brewery's marketing of getting people to vote for their beers increasing. You know, some people do it tastefully. Some people don't always do it tastefully. One thing I really liked, I saw Bentspoke had stickers on all the cases of their crankshaft. Saying vote for us at Gab, vote for this beer in Gabs and stuff like that, which I thought was really well done. But yeah, what do you guys think about people asking for votes? Does it turn you off?
I think it depends on how it's done for me. There's a way of doing it, and I think most, I mean, there are rules and regulations around what breweries are allowed to
do,
right?
Yeah, Four Pines knows about them pretty well.
They're quite, yeah, they're quite rigorously applied. So I think most breweries stay on the right side of it these days. I don't know. I think it's fine to remind people that there is a Hottest 100 and that they should apply their vote in the Hottest 100. I don't think you should necessarily offer prizes for it, but
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, support us, support your local brewery and vote for it in the Hottest 100. That's that's fine as far as I'm concerned.
I definitely get the want to place well, because my background is I started my repping work at Feral, and this day was always choked with anxiety and not at all enjoyable. Now it's fucking wonderfully fun. But I understand people wanting to place well, because the weeks after this list was announced, often when Hotbog was doing really well, it would lead to a shit ton of sales. People venues who decide, okay, this is the year I'm going to get rid of Lion or CUB. I'm going to call the first five people on the Hottest 100 list, because it is very well advertised. So I get why people can see it being like incredibly significant sales tactic, but yeah, I wonder how many breweries are actually basing their year's work on placing well in that sense. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think anyone's making decisions in August about placing well in January.
It's more of an afterthought, right? You make the beers, then you try to get them listed.
Yeah. Which is where I think the campaigns of like, hey, vote for us, they come as like a last minute, oh shit, we got a bit of pull through that beer, I suppose we may as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a targeted effort.
But I mean, going on for the kind of the prizes for votes, how do you feel about the fact that Gabs have maybe given up and gone, well, we'll give everyone a ticket if you potentially get a Gabs Festival, a few tickets if you vote for us, to try and stop people, individual breweries going, if you vote for us, we'll give you like a case of beer or something like that. But that's kind of how it felt it got. People were voting and getting prizes, so the Gabs went, well, screw it, we'll give everyone a prize.
Just for those listening, that was the voice of Lee, our producer.
Yeah. And anyone wondering what that noise
Whoa.
Was?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Don't worry, it'll get cut out.
It's a magnificent debut appearance, Lee.
Whoa!
Beer number 7 has just been announced. It is Bolter IPA.
IPA, not XPA.
So the purple label. That's the purple one.
Purple one.
That's huge.
That's a big one.
Hey, Tim, I was going to ask, have you had a chance to look at New South Wales this year, breweries this year versus last year? Have you?
No, that's going to happen tonight if I pace myself with the beers.
let's get Tim another beer. And,
No, that I will do. I will look at that and see how they're kind of comparing. What I've noticed from the first 90 through 100 or whatever,
The spread across the states this year is incredible.
Yeah,
obviously, we just had Bolter. Queensland are doing really well. ACT with Capital and Benspoke and Pact are all kind of placing reasonably high. So I think we're increasingly seeing a massive spread across the states. So what that means for New South Wales, I'm not sure yet. But yeah, the whole nationally, the landscape's looking pretty strong.
So we've always seen, like, you know, 35% Victorian, 33% New South Wales, and it sort of trickles down from there. So you think it's going to even out a lot more?
Just from, like, a kind of eyeball test down the list, yeah, I think it will be evening out a little bit.
Just Tassie, really, that's underrepresented, I think, isn't it?
Oh, don't forget about Northern Territory.
Oh, yeah. There's now three breweries in the Northern Territory.
when they decide to join the 21st century.
Well, I think the reason behind that, like, they're obviously producing some good beers down there, but it's hard to find anywhere outside of the island because it's so hard to ship it out of there. It costs so much.
That could be...
And there's no internet down there.
The postal vote's not working.
Big survey down there.
I think also from what we've seen, you know, particularly what the Bucket Boys guys are bringing up here from the Tassie beers, they're all like, they're not like your mainstream, you know, pale ales, XPA sort of a thing. You got, you know, your Broody Islands, your Seven Sheds, Van Diemen's. They're all like pretty pointy end of the stick breweries, right?
Yeah, and I think part of that is because Bucket Boys selects the really interesting ones to bring over rather than the, you know, pretty standard ones.
Yeah, but there's no equivalent of Bolter or Stone and Wood or anything like that in?
Yeah, maybe not.
Moobrew?
Yeah.
I was actually going to say.
Moobrew in the list at all?
Nope.
No
Moobrew. I think they kind of dropped off in terms of marketing. They used to have a really good distribution and marketing, and now, I don't know. I don't know what's going on down there.
Well, it's not down there. It's probably more up here. I think last time I was in Tassie, every single convenience store had a Moobrew fridge, and it's the only beers I had in the fridge. So I think they've got the state on lockdown. They're just not sending a lot of stuff outside. Or we're not seeing it in New South Wales, at least, yet.
We should probably just say as well, beer number 2 has come out for everyone in the room.
Beer number 54 in the countdown. Which is Acacia Hopsmith.
Oh, no wonder I was tasting diacetyl now. I'm joking. It's actually tasting really good.
It's tasting really good.
It is tasting lovely.
Dave, I was
just wondering, has the Hopsmith evolved or changed much since it first came out?
Very common question. No, it hasn't. I think I literally had this same conversation this morning with another radio program. It's
Boo.
It's we get quite asked that quite a lot, you know, particularly with the hoppier styles, whether or not we've changed the recipe. You know, I liked it last year, you know, the year before was a better batch. Unfortunately, with hoppy beers, there's a lot of variability. And we're talking about New England IPAs and how much they change just going interstate after a couple of weeks. Hoppy beers change relatively quickly. And that's the major challenge for us to ensure, as we increase our distribution, that if you have a Hopsmith off tap or a Hopsmith in a can, it tastes pretty much the same no matter where you've got it. So you do get a little bit of variability because of that. But in terms of, you know, recipe changes, a little bit of change for seasonality. Hops change, ingredients change. But, the core recipes of all of our core beers pretty much stay the same.
With your beers being such a hop-focused thing, if they have a really bad harvest, is that going to affect the quality of your beers, do you think? Like, if the Aussie hops just aren't really singing true one year, how does that affect you, or what can you do to amend that?
If the Aussie hop harvest is no good, then it really doesn't affect me. about 95% of our hops come from the States, but we're seeing more and more consistency in the States. We're also seeing much better hops coming down to Australia. Even, when I was brewing professionally 5 years ago, a lot of the hops that were coming down here were actually, almost scraping the bottom of the bucket of the stuff that we got here. But we're starting, as our wholesalers like, you know, Bintani and HBA get better relationships with the farmers over in the States, we're getting some bloody good hops. And it really makes a difference to our beers. So it's hard enough just to deal with, hops, you know, they're like grapes, they get harvested once a year, and we've got to try and keep them as good as they were at the beginning of the season to the end of the season, keep them cold, keep them, locked up in bags under nitrogen, whatever it is. But it's really difficult. But now that we're seeing much better quality hops getting to us, it's making our life a little bit easier.
With that, we're going to take a break for about, actually, before we take a break, very quickly, the next beer number 6.
Whoa. Woo. What?
Here we go.
Oh, wow. That's a shock.
Pirate Life Mosaic.
Oh, come in! Yes! I've told you!
It's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged.
Sessionable.
Ever been in a work function and it's just cheap drinks on a boat for like the fifth year in a row? And you think to yourself, ugh, I wish I was doing something fun. Well, Dave's Travel and Events Group can help you out with that. With Dave's Events, they can hook you up with some great team-building activities like axe throwing. Or they can curate a nice degustation matched with some good beer. Or they can even help you brew your own beer for your staff and clients. Whatever your needs, Dave's Events can customise an awesome local beer experience for your workplace. So it doesn't have to be just drinks in a boat. Although it can totally be drinks in a boat. For more info, check out daves.com.au.
So we took a quick break. So in the break, number five was announced. It is the Gage Roads single fin. And number four has also been announced. And we got the screen working in the break, but it's not refreshed
Jackson,
yet.
Jackson, you'll like this one. Number four is Newtowner.
Newtowner.
Young Henry's Newtowner.
There you go.
Sydney represent, right, yeah. Guys?
That's our first beer in the top 10.
It is. It's the first New South Wales beer in the top 10.
You sure it's not Foo Lager?
It's Foo Beer, right?
Yeah, it's Foo Beer. Yeah, yeah.
All right, I've got a question that involves the whole panel. You literally have one beer that you can call as your fave that isn't in the Hottest 100, that one of your faves from the last 3 months. Just say each of your favourite beers.
Are we all just going to say Wildflower St. Florence?
Yes.
Yeah, that's okay, that sweet. For me for sure.
Sorted.
Or even just Wildflower anything, but...
I'd go Elsie from Batch. Solid beer, yeah.
Chapeau, like, very much made my Christmas day.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That wasn't
this
in,
year.
But that was amazing, yeah.
What's the beer that's the Wildflower one that's in the gift pack that went out this week?
Oh, the Collective number one.
The Collective number one? Yeah, that's it for me.
And the beer we're drinking right now is the Moondog C equals MD squared. It is a maple bacon bourbon barrel aged cherry red ale. I'm told by a scientist that that equation is not scientifically sound, by the way.
It depends what the variables mean, right?
It depends if you redefined a new constant, right?
True, true. Is that's what we're talking about in the second half of this podcast.
Is redefining the equation of relativity.
Yeah.
Do we have any more questions? That's true.
Mine was St. Florence. Did you have a different one?
I drank a lot of Wildflower table beer this year.
Are we basing it on our favourite or what we drank most of, though?
Well, I drank most of
that
it.
That can be the same thing.
It was my favourite.
But they can be.
Yeah.
If it's a beer that you can get often enough, like, why not?
Okay.
Well, it's a double barrel question because it's what have you drunk most of in the last 3 months that isn't in the top 100? Because a lot of the beers that I've drunk in the last 3 months have been in the top 100.
Sourpuss. So.
And it's got to be your top beer.
And it has to be the top beer that didn't make it. So,
Most I've drank, Passion of the Puss.
Yeah, Sourpuss.
Yeah. No Wayward from the top 100.
I think we mentioned that already. 94 for the Sourpuss. And it's sad, but I think with the timing of the Passion of the Puss, we kind of cannibalized our own votes for that one. But, humbly, like the 100 through to... Well, pretty much the entire list is full of amazing beers, so... Bar one or two, but we won't.
Which ones?
I mean, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to do it. You're going to bait me all you want, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be that guy. Nobody likes that guy. I'm not going to be that guy.
I don't think Moondog Beer Can came in the 100.
I don't believe it did.
And that is one I won't stop talking about. I love that beer.
It is a good beer.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
Okay, so I've been thinking about how to best word this. What emerging style, if you think it originated 10 years ago, would have the biggest impact now or would be the most interesting? You get what I mean? Like, sort of out of the New England's and sours and like that sort of stuff. If it had occurred 10 years ago, which one do you think would be the most sort of...
Would have stuck around for the longest?
Or the most interesting? Yeah.
I think, you're seeing it now with sours probably on like more like a 5-year basis, I suppose.
Well, I mean, it's... I mean, sours is a bad example. Like, I'm just like trying to think of like what stuff is coming up right now that would be the most interesting.
Okay,
I still don't get why the hell saisons aren't more popular in Australia.
That's like, it.
That's one I would have gone for. Because
I totally agree with you. But ask a publican, right? Like, you can't pour it through a tap.
People, I don't know.
Most of
wheat beers in Australia, publicans don't like, but saisons, particularly, I think, are the best suited beer for our climate. I'd be smashing a Saison right now if I had one in front of me. So,
agreed. Well, wholeheartedly agreed, 100%.
So, yeah, that'd be my pick, say Saisons.
But why is it the saisons and wheat beers as well, right? We got the perfect climate for wheat beers, and there's some fantastic examples in the States coming in now, whether they be hoppy wheats, whether they be traditional styles. They just don't work. And the same with saisons. We can all sit around and everybody will say, all the customers will say, this beer is A1, but it will not blow through the taps.
I think it's perceived that it's a meal somehow, because I think it's people make the correlation, regardless if it's an American wheat, if it's some sort of hybrid style, including wheat, it still flows back to this thing of, oh, I remember I was like 20 years old and I had a Franziskaner Hefeweizen when it was too hot and I had to chew through it, and now wheat beers are off the table for me. It's just like that perception of it's thick, it's chewy, it's a meal. I think it really sticks with a lot of people.
And does it take someone like a Pirate Life, or probably not a good example now, but somebody with a big name to come out and release something that's great, and people will say, you know what, I'm going to give it another shot, and that will be the catalyst for something different. Mm. Because, man, we want to brew wheat beers, but we just know that they're not going to sell.
Yeah, I think the other part of it as well is, our pubs and our...
there we go.
Our tap systems.
Hold on.
There we go. Yeah, our pubs and our
we
tap
have
systems
our number three.
Just can't handle it.
All right, crankshaft in at number three.
Crankshaft gone up from 8 last year to number 3 this year. That's a big climb. That's pretty awesome.
It's not a bad replacement for Hop Hog, I think, as a top 3 pale ale.
100%.
Yeah, IPA.
So I think we've seen, six of the top 10 so far have had a very common theme running through them.
Tinnies,
yeah. I think Ben Spoke's done really well this year in terms of getting out there as well.
Yeah.
They're on planes. You can get them on planes now?
Yeah, only if you're flying out of Canberra.
Not if you're flying out of Canberra. Only if you're flying out of Sydney or Melbourne.
Flying out of Canberra sounds like a great idea there, doesn't it?
Hey, everybody just calm down.
Given it's known that you really can't taste food on a plane, they have to amp up the salt and the content, things like that. So what are we thinking about with the craft beer? Is it a good thing, or is it a better thing, or is it a bad thing?
Well, it's like, have you ever had a tomato juice on a plane?
I always have Bloody Mary on
it
a plane.
It tastes so different, but in a really nice way on a plane.
A heavily vodka'd Bloody Mary on a plane. That is my drink on a plane.
Yeah,
it's a shame that doesn't work for Bogues, isn't it?
Going on what you're saying, Lee, and I agree. It's like, well, maybe a really hoppy beer like a Crankshaft would be an awesome beer to have on a plane. And maybe someone who doesn't like IPAs might actually like it a bit more. 10,000...
And then
really
land, go and get one and be really disappointed.
Marine Ghoster or something, yeah.
Yeah. Bryn, we got a question.
Yeah, given the 2017, probably the year of the can, we're seeing this time around in the hottest 100 a lot of cans. A lot of brewers dip their toe in the water. East Coast Canning, using a portable canning line. Question for the panel, probably for the brewers amongst. Who do you think that this year will be the investment in a canning line rather than bottling?
There we go.
That's my favorite question. 100%.
Yeah. Does Wayward have a canning line?
No, not currently, mate. No.
That's my favorite question.
No, not currently.
Bottling lines are 2016, I think.
So on Bryn's question, it's a bit of a two-stager. Like, who, technology and canning lines are, I guess, are you talking things about oxygen rates and stuff like that, or just beers in cans that are tasting really good?
It's pretty simple. Beer in a can in Australia sells.
And it rates, according to this poll as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's the clincher, isn't it? Like, unless you're spending inordinate amounts of money on a canning line that reduces DO below the rate of a bottling line, like there becomes a certain point where you either spend less money and then sell your principles short and have an IPA out or a pale ale out that you know is more oxidized than it would be if it was in a bottle, or you go for sales. And so it's a conundrum. It's a conundrum.
So I've heard before that the entry cost for canning is prohibitive, right? It's very expensive.
Dave, I'm assuming that you've at least had a look at prices for canning lines. You're using East Coast Canning at the moment?
Yeah, we are. And I think there's a little bit of a misconception in the market that it's only the little guys that are dipping their toe in the water. And it is the case for 90% of East Coast Canning's customers. We started like that. There's no secret that cans have taken off for us. They've been massive. The upswing in volume for us from bottles to cans is just far outweighs what we ever imagined it would be. We have a very, very good relationship with those guys. It's not a horribly, in the scheme of a brewery, it's not a horribly expensive way to do it either. We are of the volume where we actually are printing our own cans as well, so we don't have the cost of labels and all that kind of stuff. So And to be honest, you know, we've developed such a good relationship with those guys. We treat them like they are part of our team. And trust me, with a piece of equipment like a bottling line, a canning line, any of these big complex pieces of equipment, it's a real pain in the ass to keep them going. And to have a partner who spends all their time, 100% of their time, focused on that line and getting it right, so we don't have to worry about it, is awesome. So we've made a decision this year. We're gonna be increasing our distribution, as I mentioned before, but we're gonna continue with East Coast because it's such a great relationship.
Awesome. So I take it you're really happy with the product coming out of it in the cans as well.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, we've started to measure all this stuff. Again, the East Coast canning line is an expensive canning line. They're spending money on it every week. It's not. If I was to do what they're doing, I probably couldn't afford it. I mean, we could make it work, but it's certainly, clearly I don't need to. But they're constantly, like we are with every part of our brewery, we're constantly working on the quality of our beer. So we do that all the way up to Bright Beer Tank, and then they look after, you know, that last little step, and we trust them, and we know that they're good at not stuffing up that last bit, you know.
And Doc, you use breweries that your last few beers have been in cans as well. Tonic was in cans. You're using breweries because if you bought a canning line, I'll be quite intrigued. But
we switched breweries to go into cans essentially, and we looked at the price of getting East Coast Canning to come and can our products at a brewery that we contract at, and the price was just prohibitive. There's not a lot of money when you're doing a smaller volume as a sort of a gypsy brewer or a cuckoo brewer. So for us to do it at a facility that has their own canning line, it's really about the price point. When you put a beer into a can, people expect the beer to be a certain price when it hits the shelf.
Yeah.
And to be a certain price even if the outlet, the bottle shop or the independent wants to do like a 4-pack or a 6-pack option, it needs to fit within a certain
price range. Yep.
And we just couldn't make that work doing it through a contract canning in a contract brewery. It just, the math doesn't work.
All right, we are seconds away from finding out the number two and thereby number one beer. Tim, what are you thinking? What's your money on?
I'm thinking XPA number two, Stone and Wood number one.
Whoa, it's just come out, guys.
Oh, here we go.
Number two's been announced. Stone and Wood Pacific Ale in at number two.
There is no God.
So, there you go. So, right in front of you now is the top beer in the country, I guess.
Well, we got Rabbit and Spaghetti.
Yeah. Rabbit and Spaghetti, pale ale, yeah.
Calling it early.
Well timed, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent. So, we have Bolter XBA in front of us, is that... Wait, now I'm confused.
This is Bolter XBA.
Yeah,
yeah,
good. Yeah, cool.
So, guys,
congratulations
what do you
to Bolter.
Oh, 100%.
What a massive
congratulations.
Meteoric rise that's been in the last couple of years.
How do you reckon Stonerwood feels? Like, honestly, like, is this, like, Jackson, you've been in this position with Ferrum.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, it's like.
Is it the end of the world? Or. I mean, if you want to look at leaderage, Stonerwood is, like.
I feel like the first year that I worked for Ferrum was the year we got pipped for number one spot by Pack Ale. And, like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe I'm just insecure enough, but you do kind of go, oh, maybe it was just my, you know, not quite hard enough work in New South Wales that made the difference, more, you know, and you...
Oh, it totally was, by the way.
It's on your CV. It's your highlight of your career.
Yeah.
Right. But no, like, it is a little bit gun-wrenching, but I don't think... The problem is, like, I reckon Pacific Ale have been feeling it for quite some time now, because, like... So my work takes me up into Newey, Port Stephens area, the Sunny Coast, and all that sort of stuff. And, like, I'd say 50% of the taps that were guaranteed to be Stone and Wood, you couldn't shift it with all the discounts in the world, 50% of them are now XBA taps and have been for 6-12 months. So I think this would just be confirming the fears and the realization that they've been having for a good year now.
With the amount of beer that they're making, is it that much of a fear? Like, I'm sure, like, you'd always want to be number
one. But that's it. My next sentence was going to be, like, how much are they hurting, really? You know, because they're still making a shitload of beer.
Is there anything Stone and Wood can do to get number one back?
Cans? Make a New England IPA? I don't know. No, I think actually...
Brewcult collaboration?
I genuinely...
I thought it already was.
I think Pack Ale, I'm calling it now. This is big. If Pack Ale were to go in cans this year, I reckon they could reclaim number one spot.
So do I. Imagine that gold can. Easily. That gold can would look amazing.
Yeah, that colour on a tinny would look great.
You heard it here first.
Because I think that's where the market's at.
I think Ben had a question.
Is it kind of now impossible for a lot of the smaller independent breweries to compete with the social media juggernaut that is the Bolter XPAs and these guys? Are we tracking more towards almost like the US evolution where everything's going hyper-local, where looking after your local crew and your local customers and regular customers is more important than getting shitloads of mass packaged product out into the market? Or is it still super important to have huge amounts of packaged product and branding and that kind of stuff pushing out?
That's a good question.
I think something that's been happening over the last 12 months or so, or maybe even longer than that, is kind of a stratification in the type of breweries we're seeing. And I think we're going to see those national brands just accelerate and grow. So the likes of Stone Woods, Four Pines and so on are going to be there, and they're going to have the money to throw at that kind of marketing. Second to that is going to be the ones that do that local thing well and make a really strong presence in their local market and can kind of establish a hold and kind of an identity within their state.
Yeah, I think I do see Australia going more towards that hyper-local thing, if only because it's easier and it makes you more money than putting out a packaged product all across Australia. That's Australia's a really big country. That's a logistical nightmare. But if you focus on your hyper-local area, you don't have to worry about those specific logistical problems as much.
If you have a physical brewery in the next 18 months at least, you need to start really focusing on just pushing as much as you can through your local tap room, your local outlet, just because of all the container deposit schemes that are coming in. So New South Wales has already got ours. The other states are following. You just need to start pushing the volume through growlers and other methods through your local tap room, because it's just going to... The cost of beer is going up in New South Wales now, and we're seeing the sales impact already sudden hits. It's going to be interesting times.
The other thing as well is pretty sure that Benspoke don't even have sales reps outside of Canberra.
They do.
They do?
Yeah, they do.
They don't have a sales rep in New South Wales.
Not currently,
but they did.
They've had a bit of a revolving door in New South Wales, yeah. but they are looking,
but are they in Dan's? Are they
yeah,
nationwide?
They're in Dan's. Yeah. I think that more than anything else, like locality, sure. Like, yes, focusing on a very small area and minimizing your expectations will probably be a really good move. And if you've got bricks and mortar, trying to squeeze as much out of that as you can is going to be, what's going to keep a lot of businesses afloat probably in the next sort of 5 years. But I think that there's a lot of value in going niche. Like, look at Wildflower's success. I mean, not entirely true. Like, they've been going ham in Victoria.
But they
didn't make
the list.
Basically, most wine country, any kind of wine country at the moment is doing natural wines, knows who Topher is. Like, he's just that guy. And I think that what he's doing will probably be a little glance into what will become more and more common. It won't necessarily be sours, barrel-aged sours. It might be just, Fixation are openly an only IPA brewery, right? Yes, I know, complexity there, blah, blah, blah. But what if somebody came out and just like, 6 months of the year, we're doing stouts. We're just doing big, bullshit, massive stouts. There would be enough of a market to float some success there, for sure.
I think, going back to your question, Ben, that... it's not super local in that niche yet, but I think we are starting to move down that trend, or the breweries who will use that as a model. It might not work for everyone, but the other thing is, we're too small a country. We can't be like the states where you can only distribute to two states and be and make what you need to make to some degree, if that's what your scale is. So we don't have the population density, so as a brewery grows, they're going to have to distribute across every state just to make enough beer. Yeah, you will see those, people like Batch, for example, don't send a lot of beer outside of New South Wales. They send a little bit to Victoria, but how many beers? They do, 52 beers a year or something stupid like that, and have a great local share of the market, but don't have a lot outside.
I think a lot of what we've talked about today points towards maybe what how things might shape up in the future, particularly, I guess, at the pointier end of the craft beer, in inverted commas, market.
And when we talk about hyper-local and especially cellar door, the importance of the cellar door, the brewery tap room, with volatile styles such as like the New England IPA, which have a short shelf life and are suited to a very local release. And then with the continued rise in canning, with those three things coming together, I think we'll see, you know, that kind of volatile style or very specialist producers releasing things for the immediate local area. And I think obviously canning or mobile canning is going to play a part in that.
Once Pacific Ale became number two, we knew this was coming, but Bolter XBA has just been crowned number one in the Hottest 100 for this year, so congratulations.
What is it about the Bolter branding that you think has resonated so well with Australian drinkers?
I mean, yeah, it's the happy face. That's definitely part of it. Look at it. It's a very clean brand, and they've got a lot of weight behind them with their owners, with the surfing pros that they have,
and the guys that are bringing that branding side of it. They are pros like outside of beer. They are branding and marketing pros. It's not the kind of secondary thought or the attempt by people who. You know, you look at some brewery branding and it's not quite up to scratch with the likes of Bolter, and you can see Bolter have got the expertise behind them.
I think the other thing is their campaign, their marketing campaign is almost exclusively Instagram. They don't do much marketing outside of Instagram at all. They do some here and there, but that is their major platform, and I think that's really interesting.
If you have a strong visual identity, Instagram's the platform for you.
Absolutely.
It just makes total sense.
I think it also helps. Like, obviously, like, you know, I think we gloss over the fact that it is a really good beer.
Yeah.
And I don't think a top beer in the poll will ever be a very average beer. It is a really good beer, and they do really good marketing, and they have a really good social media presence, and they get out everywhere. You know, you need those
Absolutely
three
fair.
Things. Distribution, marketing, and brewing
it's a good beer.
It's
a bloody good beer. It is. Yeah. It is a really good beer.
I've had plenty of conversations with people who drink Bolter, love Bolter XPA, have no idea who's invested in the company. And when you tell them, they go, oh, that's kind of cool. But it has not informed their decision-making process in the slightest. So I think it's much more about cans, branding, and, the beer being really solid.
Yeah, the surfers, like, that, I haven't had that conversation with anyone. I remember, like, you know, when they first announced, my mum was like, oh, there's a pro surfer with a brewery. Did you know about this one? I'm like,
I might have done.
But, like, I think, They were very conscious that they didn't want to be known as a surfers brewery.
Yeah, I think they could have played it up a lot more than they have.
Before we wrap up, we have a special beer. Thanks to Beer Farm for donating this to the podcast. It is the Pineapple Sour.
It's yummy.
Speaking of excellent branding, the label on this is incredible. Yeah, it is maybe
it's
my
pineapple.
Favorite.
It's a $50 no.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's maybe my favorite label ever. Thank you all for coming out today to the Royal Albert Hotel to join in the Hottest 100 with us. Thank you very much to all of our guests. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jackson. Thank you, Dave. And thank you, Doc, for joining us.
Phew.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you very much.